Record.
All right, so we left off. Genesis 41, yeah? Is that where we're at? 42. Nope, 42. 42, all right? So again, so Genesis 37, we meet Joseph, the last of our patriarchs, if you will, the fourth, along with Judah, sold into slavery at 17 years old from the hands of his brother, winds up in Egypt through a caravan of Ishmaelites that roll through, gets sold into Potiphar's house. Okay, we find out that he spends some unknown length of time in prison, at least 2 years, stuck in a dungeon for his being framed by Potiphar's wife for trying to sleep with her, which obviously wasn't the case. So we're seeing a guy with incredible integrity and morals, walking with God, even in the midst of difficulty. He gets out of that, stands before Pharaoh. Again, after 13 years of being in Egypt, God brings him before Pharaoh at 30 years old, okay, and has the answer to Pharaoh's problem, his dream of this famine that was about to come that none of the magicians, none of his sorcerers could figure out. Joseph had the answer because God had spoken to him in dreams. And then now we're seeing kind of that exaltation. Pharaoh is a gifted leader, puts him in a place to orchestrate all that's going on. And now he's working on, as second in charge of the most powerful country in the world, he is working on making right the wrongs suffered by his brothers, or that he suffered by his brothers. Okay, so we're right in the midst of that story. They have come to get food in the midst of the famine. We're going to find out that we're about 2 years into the famine, the second time that he's met now his brothers. So he sent them home, said, here's some food, put the money back in their sacks, and now they've got to return back to Egypt again. Okay, so we are in chapter 42, okay, the first visit of the brothers, okay, and we left off, I think, in 24 with Joseph crying over their beginning to be guilty conscience, okay. Verse 21, when he kind of confronts them with this issue of wanting to throw these guys in prison and holding Simeon, their response, 42:21, read that. So what are you seeing beginning to happen in the brothers? There's some bickering that we talked about before, but what are they admitting to? Yeah, they're beginning to see guilt over what they've done wrong. And that's what Joseph is after. Now, they're not done, but I think this is the first softening, if you will, of these guys. They're realizing, man, this is not, we're not going to get off scot-free for our crimes. Somebody knows, and God's against us. Okay, Reuben tries to speak in 22. We saw that. And again, Joseph is hearing everything they say, and the bickering goes between them. 24, the first of three times that we see Joseph weep over the sin of their brothers and this desire to reunite with them. Okay, and he grabs again Simeon, and he's going to hold him. Okay, so 25, let's pick up there and let's watch as he sends now the brothers back to Canaan, to dad, with orders of bring Benjamin or there's no more food coming. You've got enough to sustain you for a bit, but without that, you're dead. Okay, so pick up at 25. All right, so he puts back their money in their sack. Okay, we didn't cover this, did we? Am I like totally brain dead? Okay. All right, perfect. Sorry, I'm like some of this, like I can't remember what I've studied, what I've taught, what I've said in my head, what I've said out of my mouth. It all gets very confusing. It's welcome to having a small brain, okay? So sends them back with their money, okay? And obviously that had to be what the heck's going on with them? Verse 28, you see that? What has God done to us? So they're seeing, boy, the hand of this is bigger than just this random house steward of Pharaoh. This is God is slowly kind of unraveling our plan, and they're seeing that. And Joseph, you'll see, is painfully slow at times bringing this situation about. He makes them sit and fester and think and process and bicker for 3 days in prison, and he's bringing about this exactly how he wants to, okay? 29, they get to their father in Canaan. They give basically the story to him. They walk through 31 and following. Hey, we came into the land. We told Joseph who we were. We don't know. They don't know this guy's Joseph, but they tell this unknown guy who they were, about their brothers. Verse 35, as they were emptying their sacks, he tells them, hey, every man's bundle of money was with his sack. When their father saw the bundles of money, they were dismayed. So now they've all kind of figured this out. Jacob's seen it. And here's Jacob's response in verse 36 when he sees, now we're missing another brother, Simeon, okay, the second oldest, and all your money's back. For 36, this is his response. Okay, so he's obviously distraught over it. What would you think if you're Jacob? Interpret that response for me. What does that mean? Jacob's no more and Simeon is no more. What do you think his suspicion is with his sons at this point? Boy, how quinky-dinky that you've lost now two brothers and you have all this money with you that you didn't have when you, or you had it when you left. But why would that be?
Maybe they sold Simeon.
Maybe they made some money off Simeon, right? So Jacob's got to be, maybe, right? Possibly. So, and now he's saying, and now you want me to give you Benjamin? You want a third son to go sell? To do what with, right? So absolutely not. Like, if you're in Jacob's place, you're like, forget it, right? Now, push is going to come to shove here in chapter 43, okay? Look who tries to lead here, verse 37. This is interesting. That's a pretty noble statement, right? My two kids will be a down payment for yours, okay? Jacob, take your two grandsons, my two sons, and they'll be a deposit, a guarantee of the life of your favorite remaining son, Benjamin. If we do not take him and bring him back, you can have my two kids. You can take their lives. Now, for a dad to say that about their two sons, you know, Reuben means business, right? That's a pretty significant statement. But Jacob's response is, you know what? No. Cliff, read 38.
But he said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is the only one left. If harm should happen to him on the journey that you are to make, you would bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to Sheol.
Now, tell me why Jacob says, Reuben, no. Okay, possibly, but that's still, I mean, if you're going to swear by something, swearing by the life of your kids, there's not a whole lot greater like saying, I've got skin in the game, right? That's a big deal. Why is his voice on mute with dad right now? What did Reuben do to punt his character? You guys remember? He slept with his daddy's concubine on the rooftop and said, die, give me your money. That's basically what that meant. I'm the new guy in town. I'm firstborn and I want my rights now. Jacob says, your voice is on mute to me. You do not have the ability and the character to lead. You've demonstrated that by your actions. What's interesting is the exact same proposition is going to get made by another son, the same proposition, and Jacob says, okay. It's fascinating, okay? So it's not the deal that he doesn't like. It's the dealer, okay? It's the problem with Reuben and his character. So he's out. Mm-hmm. It's my mom. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, and it's funny because I speak to my kids that way when they misbehave at times. Like, that's my wife, and she was my wife long before she was your mother. So you want to take sides? I'm siding with her. So you're going to see that again out of Jacob in a second that's even more of a punch in the face. So I think that's a piece of it. What else do you notice, again, about this favoritism issue in Jacob with that verse?
Well,
Like that just, like, Dad, really? Like that's stinging, right? And if he dies, basically he's saying, my life's going to go to Sheol, right? I'm going to hell in a handbasket. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. My life's over, right? Yes, I have 10 other sons at that point, but none of you really matter. I mean, that's a pretty firm statement. So there's very clear favoritism. Even losing Joseph, at least in Jacob's mind, he thinks he's dead, has not changed the way that he operates with his son. He still clearly is choosing favorites, okay? And that had to be very difficult for the brothers to hear, right? So not a good situation. So 43, guess what's still occurring? God is still ramping up the famine in the land. It's getting worse. Why would God be doing that? Why would God not shut this down yet?
Still working on the village.
Yeah.
It's not over yet.
A lot of this is for, I've got to get this situation brought to completion. This is a test. And if God shuts down the famine, then what? Do they need to go back to Egypt? They're certainly not in a hurry, right? Maybe we'll get Simeon, maybe we won't, but... And who knows? So, interesting. So the famine's still severe in the land, and the idea is it's continuing to get worse. Okay, so what people had, they've used. It's gone. They're 2 years into five. No bueno. Okay. Verse 2, they brought a whole bunch of food with them from Egypt, but what happens? They ate it all. So now it's gone. Now we don't get a time marker on how long that is. I would imagine it's probably at least a few weeks, maybe a month. We're not probably talking about a year, but they've eaten some food, and now it's gone. So Dad says, hey, guess what? End of verse 2, go back and buy us a little food, okay? What does he say, verse 3? Look who speaks. So Jacob's kind of crossing his fingers and trying to forget about this conversation that, you know, they had with this guy, saying, just go and go buy more food. And Judah said, listen, Dad, it's not possible, okay? So you've got Reuben, who's punted his moral integrity. You've got Simeon in jail. Who's the next in the birth order? Just remember? Simeon's brother, Levi. There's another guy, okay? And we haven't heard a ton of Levi other than the Shechem incident in 34 when he and his brother massacred the whole land. Simeon and Levi did that together. All those guys that tried to marry her, guy had raped Dinah, and then he took care of business with everybody. Who's speaking now? Who's the recognized leader of these guys? It's Judah, okay? Reuben's on mute. Judah's the guy that everybody looks to for leadership at this point, okay? So Judah is the recognized leader. Again, we just read chapter 38 where he goes and sleeps with his daughter-in-law, okay? So he's not the bright, shining example of godliness by any means, but God's got his hand on this guy for whatever reason, okay? And he's going to redeem himself. So he's certainly a screw-up, but he is the guy that's now leading the family. He speaks up and says, Dad, listen, we can't go. If we go down without Benjamin, he won't even let us in the gates. He's not going to see our face, okay? Verse 6, Israel now. So he goes, again, back and forth between Jacob and Israel. He's one of the few names that Scripture just goes back and forth. Why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother? So, like, why did you even bother telling this dude that we had another brother? So he's angry and offensive, right? Like, that would be normative, right? Like, and that's basically what they say. Like, how are we to know that he was going to ask it? Like, and that's their defense in the following deals. He's like, we're honest men. He basically encapsulates it somewhere. I guess it's just in verse 7. The man questioned particularly about us and our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Have you another brother? So he answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, bring your brother down? Like, that's out of left field, right? Now, watch Judah's proposition. Verse 8, read that.
Delayed, we would now have returned.
So what is Judah saying? It could have been done. So like we've delayed too long. We sat around and ate all the food that we had. We should have returned already, but that's not the case. So what is he offering Jacob?
The lives of himself and his little ones.
Yeah. The little ones he's speaking of are all the ones that would die if they don't get food. So Reuben offers his two kids. What does Judah offer?
Himself.
I will be, my translation says, shirti. Do you guys know what that is? A pledge. What does that mean? When you guys go buy your first car, if you haven't already, and you make peanuts like all of us do, what did they ask you for before they would allow you to have a loan for 20 grand? A down payment or a what? If you don't have a down payment big enough, you need what? You need a cosigner. You need someone that has money in their bank that says, I'll vouch for them. If that check bounces, you can come after me. That's what he's saying. I am the down payment. I will be the guarantee. If something happens to him, it's on me. You can take my life for his, okay? Not just my kids, which Reuben offered, and I think in a sense he's saying his as well. Judah's saying, I will put my life on the line for Benjamin. And this is right after, by the way, Jacob just gave him a backhanded slap saying, I love him more than I love all of you. And that's a pretty selfless act, in a sense, to say, Dad, okay, I get it. I will exchange my life for his if that's how you feel. So, again, weird father-son dynamics, but it is what it is, okay? So he has a voice for whatever reason, even in the midst of his own issues, that Dad listens to, okay? So he says, I will be the down payment for him. Verse 11, read that. Okay, so he says, great, if it must be so, and then he's going to carry out the plan. So he agrees, and then this is what they're going to do. This is fascinating. Read 11 and 12.
Take some of the choice fruits of the land in your bag and carry a present down to the man. A little balm and a little honey, gum, myrrh, pistachio nuts, and almonds. Take double the money with you. Carry back with you the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was an oversight.
All right, so first part, they're going to take some balm, some myrrh, some honey, some gum, pistachio nuts, and almonds. What's that? Yeah, you guys remember the proverb we read about having a good first impression, that your gift opens up the way for the giver? That's what they're saying. Bring presents. Bring gifts. You're coming into the presence of a higher authority. Give them something, okay? Here's what they're going to give them. And then, after that, they're going to take double the money. Why is that?
Because
So go rebuy the first grain that we just got through eating, okay? And then you're going to go buy more with the rest. So take double the money. Do you notice, what's the financial condition of Jacob right now? He's fine, okay? Here's a blank check. Here's a bunch of gifts. Go take care of it. Is it not fascinating to you guys that they are loaded, but all of their money cannot solve their problems? You guys ever thought about that? Gosh, if we just had more money, problems would be solved. I promise you they wouldn't. I cannot tell you how many times I have watched God put people in tests or distress or whatever that financially there's no issue. If they had to write a check to fix the problem, they could do it in a heartbeat. But God, for whatever reason, says, man, this issue is not financial, right? I'm going to put you in a situation that your money cannot fix a health problem. It can't fix some situational deal. You can't buy your way out of whatever. It's just the nature of the beast. God oftentimes puts people like you and me that aren't, right, CEOs of companies and whatever in situations that, gosh, money would fix this. If I just had $400 more for rent, or if I could just make my car payment, or boy, if I could just keep the PG&E on this month, right? And we think money would solve everything. God does the things he does for a reason, and he gets us to the end of our own rope to where whatever resources we have don't work. And we go, okay, God, I have to give this to you. So fascinating to me that Jacob's got all the money he could possibly want. He's rich, he's old, he's fine. His money does not solve problems, okay? So fascinating. So take the money, go back. Maybe it was a mistake that the money wound back up in your sacks, we're going to go make it right. Okay, and you see again his character. We're not taking a freebie. Take your money back. We're going to pay for it the way we were supposed to. Take your brother, verse 13, also, and arise and return to the man. And 14, may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of this man, that's Joseph, that he may release to you, your other brother and Benjamin. As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. What do you see? It's a slap in the face there in his comment in verse 14. Who's your other brother? Simeon, who's sitting in jail right now, rotting. He doesn't even mention him by name, right? Your other brother, not my son, but your brother and Benjamin. It's like, man, Jacob, you know, it's just kind of it's subtle, but it's just, gosh, it's kind of a punch in the face. Okay, verse 15, keep going. All right, so they take Benjamin, they go down, they have everything they need, and now they're in the presence of Joseph again. Okay, keep going.
When Joseph saw Benjamin with him, he said to the steward of his house, bring the men into the house and slaughter an animal and make ready for the men. For the men are to dine with me at noon.
Okay, so now he's going to prepare this feast. He sees them coming, okay, and he recognizes there's 11. Okay, that's one more than they left with, so somebody else is with him. He assumes it's Benjamin, but he doesn't know, okay? Now, math will tell us it's been 22 years since he's seen Benjamin, okay? He left home at 17, was in slavery till 30, okay? So there's, 13 years, okay? He's in slavery. He has 7 years of famine, okay? And then another 7 years preparing for the famine, and they're 2 years into the famine, okay? 22 years since he's seen Benjamin, okay? Benjamin was a baby when he left, or, you know, a toddler. He has no idea what this guy looks like. So standing in front of him, he could probably maybe see some family resemblance, but he couldn't pick him out of a crowd. He doesn't know what he looks like, right? So he sees a guy from afar, tells his house steward, put a feast together. We're going to dine, okay? Now, when they rolled into town last time, what did they get? They didn't get a feast, did they? What did they get? You're spies, every one of you. You've come to spy out my land. Very different response. So what do you think they're expecting? Yeah, and they, by the way, when they left with money that wasn't theirs and food that they had. So, again, differing expectations every time. They walk in to buy food, they get accused. They're like, dude, there's nothing wrong with us. Now they walk in guilty, what do they get? A feast. Joseph, what are you doing? He's just screwing with them, right? These are healthy, good mind games. He's making them think. He's making them, every time they're in this presence, they're, God, what are you doing? What's going on? Something's happening. He's got the upper hand, and he's playing that card again and again and again because he's trying to elicit something out of him. And he wants to let him know, I'm going to make you think about this, okay? So they prepare this feast. His house steward prepares this feast. They're going to dine. Verse 17, so the man did as Joseph said, and he brought the men to Joseph's house. Okay, verse 18, here's what the brothers think of this. So this is their last meal, so make it a good one. Yeah, this is you're on the Green Mile. What do you want for dinner? Because it's your last. Okay, so great, let's enjoy it, and then we're all gonna die. Okay, that's kind of their thought. So again, you can see mentally what he's doing with them. He's making them think about their process. Okay, 19. So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house. Okay, so they pull him aside and they say, hey, oh my Lord, we came indeed to buy food this first time. Came about when we left your lodging place, opened our sacks. Behold, each man's money was in the mouth of his sacks. Our money was full, so we had brought it back in our hand. And we left, we paid for the food. All of a sudden we get home, we got food and money. We shouldn't have money, we should have had food. We got both. What's going on, okay? We brought this money back to pay for the stuff that we bought last time that somehow we ended up with our money back, and we brought more money, verse 22, to buy more food. We do not know, end of verse 22, who put the money in our sacks. We don't know what happened, okay? They didn't get asked this. They just confess it, okay? It's good. They're coming around, okay? Here's what happened, okay? We don't know, but here's all the money. Our hands are clean in this, okay? We're okay. Notice verse 23, the house steward's response. And remember, this guy's Egyptian. This guy isn't Hebrew.
He replied, "Peace to you. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father have put treasure in your sacks for you. I received your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them.
So what is his answer? Huh? Yeah, chill. Okay, you're okay. Why?
So the money was a blessing.
Yeah. From whom? From God. Who's God? His God? No, Israel's God, right? What do you think? I mean, just interpret for me. What's going on behind the scenes with Joseph and his house steward and the people that Joseph influences?
They're recognizing his God.
Yeah. Isn't that fascinating? Now, this guy didn't bow down and confess Yahweh is Lord, but he certainly knows about his God. He knows that Joseph doesn't worship Ra. He knows that Joseph isn't, you know, Joseph's clearly giving credit to his God. He's speaking of his God. And this guy says, yeah, I'm Joseph's steward. Your God is behind all of this. Relax. You're okay. Okay. I had your money. Okay. I'm the one that put the money in your sacks. I'm the one who received the money when it was paid. I did all of this. You're okay. So he puts them at ease and says, enjoy your meal. Okay. It may be your last, but enjoy your meal. So he's trying to ease their inward pain. Okay. Now, 24, the man brought, end of verse 23, who else do they get back? Simeon, which would have confirmed that. You're good. In fact, here's your brother back. He's going to eat with you guys. Okay, so there's a sense of, okay, we're good. Okay, 24, keep going.
And when the man had brought them into Joseph's house and given them water, and they had washed their feet, and when he had given their donkeys fodder, they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there.
All right, so they're gathering together. Joseph isn't a part of this. They're getting ready for this meal. And 26, they brought, when Joseph came home, they brought him to the house with the present in their hand, and they bowed down to the ground before them. So here's the myrrh and the gum and everything else that they were bringing to Joseph, okay? And then 27, here's when Joseph now speaks. Stop there real quick. So he asked about whom here in 27? Dad. Okay, you're going to find out. He's going to ask them again. So he's got an answer from them, and they say what? That's fine. He's good. Yes, he's good. He doesn't believe them. He's not sure that they're being 100% honest at this point. You're going to find out that answer does not satisfy him completely. He's not like, oh, good. So he'll ask him again, okay? 29 now, who does he see? He sees Benjamin, okay? At the table, okay? Ready to dine. Now he's got a close-up of him. They're in the same room together. They don't eat at the same table. It's loathsome for, like, same with the Jew-Gentile deal. The Egyptian-Hebrew deal would have been the exact same. You do not share a dining table together, okay? That was a no-no, all right? But they're in the same room. And he sees him now, and he says, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? Verse 29, remember, 22 years since he's seen Benjamin. And he said, may God be gracious to you, my son. Joseph now speaks directly to Benjamin, again, through an interpreter. May God be gracious to you, my son. Okay, now notice again, second time we see this in Joseph, verse 30.
Then Joseph hurried out, for his compassion grew warm for his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there.
Isn't that fascinating? Like, he's so overwhelmed that he can't control himself. He has to leave their presence, okay, weep, wash his face in verse 31, and then get it back together. Like, that's a pretty good, ladies, you've had cries like that. Guys don't do that probably enough. But you've been there, right? Your face is just swollen. You know, and you walk in a room and everybody's like, oh gosh, she's been crying, right? It's obvious, right? That's where Joseph's at. Everybody knows it. He leaves the room. He's been weeping. You see the compassion in this guy? His motivation is not anger. He's not vengeful. He's not trying to get back at his brothers. He's trying to coax repentance out of them. So he's putting them in a difficult situation. But his motivation isn't, I'll show you, you jerks. I'm the guy, right? He's not doing that. He feels compassion for Benjamin because he's kind of like collateral damage. He recognizes, bro, you're in the same seat I was, and however I was treated, you're probably getting it as well. A, from dad, and then from your brothers, they're probably ganging up on you. It's not fair, and I recognize that. So he feels compassion for them, but he also is going to feel a significant compassion for his brothers that have wronged them. And he doesn't want to even the score with them. He wants to forgive them, and he wants them to come forth with their own confession. Okay, so he weeps, and 31, washes his face, controls himself, and says to the house steward, serve the meal. 32, keep going.
They served him by himself and them by themselves. And the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat with the Hebrews, but this was an abomination to the Egyptians.
There you go. Keep going.
And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in amazement.
And what does he do again? Just to mess with him.
He sits with him.
Not with him.
It's in order.
In order. These are grown men, right? I mean, who's older, Jordan or Cliff? I don't know. You're grown men, you know? Like, I don't know that. It's not like we have a 5-year-old and a 9-year-old, right? There you go. There's order. It doesn't work that way. He just screws with them and says, oldest, and all the way down to Benjamin. Benjamin would have been obvious, but the rest of them, nobody knows that, right? He's just telling them, I know stuff that I shouldn't know, right? And house steward wouldn't have recognized that. The only people that would have known that were Joseph and his brothers. And it's not said, it's just done. Like, weird, right? I mean, he's just messing with them, right? And again, in a very good way, he's saying, and you'll see him, he's playing up this idea that, man, I can divine, I have interaction with the God. So he wants them to think he's fully Egyptian and has kind of a card to play that they don't know. But he's the only guy along with his brothers that would have been able to see that. And clearly they understand that. They look at each other in astonishment because they know that's not possible. Okay, watch what else they do in 34. Or he does. Sorry.
Portions were taken to them from Joseph's table, but Benjamin's portions was 5 times as much as any of theirs.
Okay, so he gives not just seconds and thirds, but he gives them 5 times as much food as Benjamin. Okay, again, favoritism. Are you going to be bitter at Benjamin because I gave him more than I gave the rest of you? He's beginning again to recreate the scenario. Let me play favorites, and let's see how you guys respond to that when I play favorites with Benjamin. Okay. And see if that frustration arises again in you, okay? And in verse 34, they feasted and drank freely with him. So you kind of get the sense that they know Joseph knows something, but the fear that they came into with, look, this is going to be our last meal because we're guilty. House steward says, listen, I had your money. Relax. Here's Simeon back. You guys are good. Enjoy your meal, okay? Joseph just wants to eat with you. So you're okay. So they're not fearing death at this point. They're still a little like, what the heck's going on? Because Joseph knows stuff that he shouldn't if he's just some other random dude. But they have no idea who they're speaking with, okay? So 44, here comes Joseph's plan. This is the last 10%. This is, I'm going to get them to kind of fess up, okay? This is what he's been planning the entire time, okay? This is why he wanted Benjamin back. 44. Okay, so repeat scenario number one. Give them food, give them all their money back. Double the money that they brought, give them all of it back. Okay, keep going.
And put my cup, the silver cup, in the mouth of the sack of the youngest with his money for the grain. And he did as Joseph told him.
This would have been like his, in Egyptian deal, it would have been, I don't know, it would have been some type of instrument that they, A, would have known it's Joseph's. It's like, in a sense, like his driver's license. You would have known that was his cup, but it also was a cup that he would have used to worship the gods of Egypt, okay? And he'll say that in a bit, like, I use that to divine. And you're like, that's weird language. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. But this was, Very clearly Joseph's, and very clearly a kind of a pagan instrument of worship, if you will. Okay, so I don't know what the equivalent to that is in our sense, but that's what it was. Okay, so put that in whose sack? Benjamin's. Okay, so you see the setup that's coming, and put the money and the grain and everything else in their sacks. Put the cup in Benjamin's sacks. Okay, and Joseph Joseph's house steward does just that. Okay, verse 3. Keep going. All right, so now they've spent the night. They've had a good night's sleep. Send them away at dawn. They're out. Okay, then I want you to take them and say, overtake them and say, why have you repaid evil with good? Which is kind of their life story, right? Why have you done evil to that person which is totally good, i.e. Joseph, all right? So why have you repaid evil for good? Verse 5, keep going. All right, so we'll talk about that here in more in a second. But so they're saying this is not some like random Tupperware piece that you took. This is a valuable, important, heirloom type deal, big deal, okay? So he overtakes them, and he says, verse 7, why does my Lord speak such words as these? Far be it from your servants to do such a thing. So the brothers say, listen, we have no idea what you're talking about. Behold, verse 8, the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks we have brought back to you from the land of Canaan. How then could we steal silver or gold from the Lord's house? Listen, we brought you the money back that you gave us the first time. We came in and said, man, we're clean-handed. And you said, we're forgiven. Why would we steal from you? We have no motivation to do that, okay? Verse 9 now, they make a statement that is significant.
Whichever of your servants is found with it shall die, and we also will be my Lord's servants.
That's a pretty confident statement when you're innocent. Listen, whatever brother has the cup, kill him, because we know we don't have it. And the rest of us will be your slaves. Like, we're sure that this hasn't happened, okay? So they offer the life of the one who has the cup. They don't know who it is, and they don't think it's anybody at this point. And we'll all go back with you and be your slaves today, right now, okay? So you can see that they feel completely innocent in this as they are, okay? And the house steward says, fantastic, verse 10.
Rest of you shall be innocent.
What does he say? He changes it. Yeah. What is he interested in? You're not all guilty. There's only one of you that's guilty. I don't want all of you. I just want the person who's guilty. The rest of you can go free. Who's guilty? Benjamin. Okay, keep going.
Then each man quickly lowered his sack to the ground, and each man opened his sack. And he searched, beginning with the eldest and ending with the youngest.
Isn't that interesting? Okay. Reuben, empty your sack. Nothing. Simeon, empty your sack. Nothing. Levi, empty your sack. Nothing. All the way down, right? And they get all the way to Benjamin. So each guy has to empty their sack. Again, in birth order, all the way to Benjamin, the 11th. And they find the cup was found, verse 12, in Benjamin's sack. They tore their clothes, and when each man had loaded his donkey, they returned to the city. So now they're coming, all of them back in town, and they're going to have to stand before Joseph again. 14, look who speaks.
When Judah and his brothers came to Joseph's house, he was still there. They fell before him on.
So you just see, again, Judah and his brothers, not Reuben and his brothers, Judah and his brothers. Joseph says to them in verse 15, what is this deed that you have done? Do you not know that such a man as I can indeed practice divination? I know all things. My God's revealed to me things that you don't know, okay? Now, I think if you're reading it at face value, Joseph's doing exactly what you think he's doing. He's screwing with them. He's not saying, I worship pagan gods. He's not saying that. He's saying, you know, if I'm the type of guy that you think I am, which is fully Egyptian and this powerful, I know things that you don't know. And my gods are powerful, which is why Egypt's, you know, the center of the world right now. Okay, so he's not, in my mind, I don't think he's confessing that. I think he's just, again, painting the fullness of this picture as to what an Egyptian steward at this level would be, second to Pharaoh. You guys with me? So, unless there's confusion that Joseph somehow became a, you know, a syncretist and is worshiping God and these. I don't think that's the case. He's just saying, you guys should have known better. I've clearly exercised my power over you. Every time we've met, you should know better. Okay? So that's the idea. Okay? Verse 16, now Judah speaks. So Judah's dumbfounded, like, I have no idea how this happens. God has found out the iniquity of your servants. So apparently Benjamin, you know, you had to imagine what that conversation was like, heading back from the hour's journey that they were away, coming back now into town. What does Judah say? What does he propose to Joseph?
We're all yours.
We're all yours, okay? Don't kill Benjamin. We're all your slaves. The house steward already said, no, we're not interested in that. We just want the one who's guilty. He's ours. And he says, no, all of us, okay? Keep going in 17. This is Joseph's response.
Then Joseph said,
"Why
be it from me that I should do so. Only the man in whose hand the cup was found shall be my servant. But as for you, go up in peace to your father."
Okay. He has set the table. They're exactly where they were 22 years ago. You guys see the situation? We've got one innocent brother that's been favored by a father who's talked about dreams and what have you, but there's nothing sinful in him, and you despise him. You don't like him because he's, you know, he's a mama's boy and he's daddy's favorite son, okay? He's done the same thing with Benjamin, okay? Benjamin may have a little bit more wrong in this, at least according to his brothers. They think he's stolen, okay? So he's kind of painted him in a bad light to his brothers and said, hey, we're good. I'll take him. The rest of you guys go home in peace. Go back to dad. That's all I'm interested in, okay? What is he doing? What is he making the brothers do right now? Yeah. Will you abandon brother and save your own rear ends, or will somebody step up and fight for what you wouldn't fight for last time? Will you defend your brother? Because Joseph recognizes if you'll forgive Benjamin and if you'll fight for Benjamin, what does that say about their attitude towards Joseph? You with me? He never makes them confess really their sin about Joseph beforehand. It's all going through Benjamin. So what is he saying about, man, if your attitude about Benjamin is such and it hasn't changed, then your attitude about me is what? The same. You don't care about me either. However, if you're willing to cover his tail, even when he's wrong and is stolen, then what does that say? Their hearts have changed over time. They feel guilty for the sin, and they're not going to do it again, okay? So he has created a perfect situation, okay? Again, this is such great literature, so well written. You know, obviously it's our Bible, but it's just, it's such a great story of just how Joseph, can you see how his brain works? Like, you wonder why he's stewarding all of Egypt right now. How long did this plan take to implement? I mean, we're talking about months to get this thing to go. And Joseph knew every piece of the puzzle. And he was slow and patient and deliberate to get them to this point. Now I've set the table. What are you guys going to do? And look who speaks in verse 18. So you're like Pharaoh. You're a god, okay? Please don't be angry at me, but I need to speak, okay? Keep going.
My lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? And we said to my lord, we have a father, an old man, and a young brother, a child of his old age. His brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother's children, and his father loves him.
So he confesses, hey, youngest brother, or old youngest brother, is dead, okay? So that's Joseph, right? He's speaking to him right now. He's dead, and he alone is left of his mother. His father loves him. Then you said to your servants, verse 21, bring him down to me that I may see him with your eyes. But we said to my lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he shall leave, his father would die. So they're telling Joseph, listen, if I were to take Benjamin like we did, my dad said he would die. Okay, so, and you said, unless he comes down, don't even bother coming. You're never going to see my face again in verse 23, 24. Thus it is we came. We went up to your servant, my father. We told him your words. We told him about all the story. Verse 25, our father said, go back, buy us some food. Verse 26, we said, Dad, we cannot go back. If we don't send Benjamin to this guy, we can't even see his face. So he basically says in verse 27, I tried to kind of cover verse 28. Judah now steps up and says, I will be, I'm sorry, he goes back in 27, talks about, or 28 rather, and talks about Joseph being torn to pieces in verse 29. If you take one also with me and harm befalls him, you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol. So he's saying this was Jacob's response. One's already dead. The second man, if he dies, it's all over with me. Verse 30, now this is kind of the concluding remark of Judah. This is what he says about his relationship with Benjamin. Read that. It's you don't understand. Like, if we don't come back with Benjamin, Dad's going to die on the spot. Their lives are knit together. Okay, this is Judah speaking to Joseph. Okay, your servant became, verse 32, a down payment, a surety for the lad to my father. And I said, if I do not bring him back to you, let me bear the blame before my father forever. If I don't bring him back, Joseph, this is on me. I promise Dad I am not coming home. So this is a pretty bold statement, okay? Judah stepping up, realizing, man, I am speaking to a guy that can take my head off at any moment. We're clearly in the wrong. He's begging Joseph for forgiveness, and he's saying, I cannot go home. He's just dug his feet in and said, I'm not leaving without Benjamin, okay? 33, here's the proposition that changes everything for Joseph. So what's the proposition? Me for him, okay? Benjamin goes, I'll stay. Has Judah done anything wrong in this situation? No, he's innocent. Benjamin's guilty, at least they think. I will exchange my life for his, okay? Beautiful picture, okay? It's also a beautiful picture, obviously, of the cross, of penal substitution. My life for his, my life for theirs, the innocent for the guilty, okay? It's why, by the way, there's so many jacked up theories of what happened on the cross. We believe in penal substitution is what it's called. That our lives and the punishment that we were due was put on another, okay? It wasn't some ransom theory or Jesus was a good example or whatever, okay? He laid his life down as a substitute for us. The entire Old Testament teaches that idea of penal substitution is what it's called, okay? Somebody has to experience the wrath of God. In this moment, somebody has to experience the wrath of Joseph. And Judah says, let that bear fully on me. I have done nothing wrong. Benjamin is guilty. He should take this according to what they know. Leave him, or leave me, and send him home, okay? So this is a really powerful picture. And who was the guy, by the way, when they were standing at the cave and Reuben said, let's not kill the lad, let's just trade him. And then Judah, or let's not kill him, let's just throw him in a pit. And then who steps up and says, you know what, let's make money off this kid. Who was the guy that suggested that early on in Joseph's life? It was Judah, right? So he's redeemed himself. He's come back, okay? And that's why this interaction is so important, because Judah's saying, man, I blew it the first time. I'm not blowing this again, okay? So this is the climax of the story, okay? Verse 35, or chapter 45, verse 1. Let's see now Joseph's response. So they're in a room when this is going down, right, with the house steward and everybody else. And Joseph now is weeping, and he says, everybody get out. And he wants him and his 11 brothers in there by themselves. And he's as he's is he's communicating for everyone to leave. He's weeping, okay? Keep going, verse 2. Like, the Egyptians heard it, Pharaoh heard of it. Like, this is legendary. Like, this guy was like, like, he's boo-hooing so loud. He's so grieved and moved and overpowered at the repentance that his brothers have experienced. Like, this is what he wanted. This is best case scenario, right? And they're like, dude, Pharaoh, you're number two guy. He's a blubbering fool. Like, he's in his house crying, right, with these Hebrew dudes, right? He made all, so word gets back to Pharaoh of this. Like, it's such a big deal, okay? So he is distraught, okay? Verse 3, here it comes for the first time. Now, first time ever, he is speaking to them in Hebrew. I am Joseph. Right? I wish I knew Hebrew and I quoted to you, but I don't, okay? I'd speak in Hebrew right now. I could probably just fake it because none of you do either. And he says, I am Joseph, like for the first time, no translator. Let me do something. No translator, and he says to them directly in their language, I am Joseph, okay? What's the first thing he says after that? Is my father still alive, right? You already asked that, but you're still not totally trusting in these guys, but now that they are completely broken, they have no reason to be dishonest, okay? So he says to them, is my father still alive, okay? And you can imagine his brothers, verse 3, could not answer them, for they were dismayed at his presence. Like, you talk about hard drives just locking up, they're like, what? Like they can't put the story together, they can't figure it out, there's no way this is Joseph, right? They've been talking to this guy for weeks and months on end in different periods, and now he just completely says, I'm your dead brother, right? So they had to be haunted, freaked out, whatever, but they could not put the pieces together, okay? Verse 4, watch what he does.
So Joseph said to his brothers, come near to me, please.
Now, and they came near, he says, come near to me. How are you feeling right now as a brother? And Joseph just said, I'm Joseph. Do you want to come near or back away? You want to back away. You do not want to be near this guy, okay? This is a cool theme with Joseph, okay? He invites them in. He says, man, what you think you should get is not at all what I want to give to you. You think you're about to get a backhanded slap and a rebuke and a how dare you and whatever. He just wants to say, I love you, I care for you, you're forgiven. But they're still like, what, right? Paint that for me in God's economy. Is Joseph is the God figure in this story. Why is that so significant? We've seen this theme, by the way, and I didn't point it out, but we've seen a number of times where Joseph said to them, come closer to me. Come closer to me. And now when he finally reveals it, he sees them shudder and he says, come closer. Why is that so important? Yeah, and it's not just all right, I'll give you grace. You're an idiot, but whatever. That's not God's heart. His motivation is, I love you. I've always loved you. There was this issue between us that you caused. That's been forgiven. Come closer. Let's restore the relationship. There is nothing inhibiting us anymore. It's done. We're the ones that hang on to all that, right? We're the ones that feel like, no, I gotta whip myself. I gotta whatever, right? It's just, that's our nature. My wife was up the hill in Sonora at a sixth grade field trip and had this last week with my daughter. If you guys are from Clovis, you remember that, right? You've all been to it. She had a really awkward interaction with a teacher who just was, made a really dumb decision and caused some, like, amongst the whatever. And he had to come to my wife and say, I blew it. And my wife immediately said, you're forgiven. And he could not wrap his mind around that. And he kept saying, I'm not forgiven. I'm not forgiven. I'm not. He wanted to pay for his sin somehow. And my wife said, it's done. You're forgiven. We're going to move on. It's okay. And his mind would not allow him to experience the grace that he was given. And our nature is the same way. I don't want to come near to you. I'm fearful of you because if I were in your seat, there'd be a baseball bat coming next, right? But you're not like me. I don't understand that, right? So they can't figure it out, okay? So he says again, come closer, verse 4. They come closer hesitantly, and he says to them, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Do not be grieved or angry with yourselves, for you sold me here, but God sent me before you to preserve life. Okay? Lots of fascinating stuff going on. There's some interesting commentary on verse 4. If you were Joseph, okay, think about this for a second. You've been speaking Egyptian the whole time. You speak Hebrew to these guys, and you say, I'm your brother Joseph, and their hard drives lock up. And then you say, come closer. I am your brother Joseph. How would you prove that? You just thought of it, Evan. Say it.
I was like a birthmark or something.
A birthmark or circumcision. Come closer. I'm circumcised. I am your brother, Joseph. This is me. No one else in this land would have been circumcised, right? It's on the text. It's a good hypothesis. It's a little awkward, okay? And welcome to the, like, 10 times it wish it wasn't co-ed, but welcome, ladies. Maybe, I don't know, but it's powerful. Either way, he's calling them saying, look at me. I'm your brother. This is me. And what does he say to them? It's fascinating. Do not be what? Yeah, just, man, don't be distressed. I've forgiven you, okay? And just, again, they can't, their minds aren't even there yet. They're not even ready to consider that that's the case. But he reminds them immediately, man, you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. Now, that is an odd statement, okay? You sold me, God sent me. You guys see the sovereign hand of God in Joseph's life, and he sees it through the movement of man? Isn't that bizarre? And he says it again. Let's keep reading. Pick up in 6 and keep going.
For the famine has been in the land for 2 years, and there are yet 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh.
Isn't that fascinating that Joseph has such a perspective that the evil hands of humans are part of God's plan for him, and he has no problem with that. It doesn't lock up his hard drive. He just sees that this is what God wanted, and this is the means which he chose to get me here. And your evil, and he's going to say it in a bit, was meant for good, okay? And it's one of the coolest pictures we have of that tension between the providence of God in human interaction and how those things work together. And in Joseph's mind, he doesn't get it, but he says, that's how it worked out. This is what God wanted, and I don't have a problem with it, okay? So that's his deal, okay? Now verse 9, okay? He says something. Keep going. So what does he want? I want dad. I want to see my father again. Again, 22 years he hasn't seen dad. Okay, so we've seen all his brothers. They're reunited, right? And they're all good. But he hasn't seen dad yet, okay? And now he's assured that he's alive, okay? He knows now because they've been honest. There's probably some conversation that happened here where he's convinced that he's still here, okay? He says, go then, get dad. Do not delay, verse 9. Come back, and you're going to live in the land of Goshen. Okay, Goshen is an area just to the east of Egypt. Okay, it's an area in Egypt that is separated, and it's also it's the best of the land. Okay, he's like, nah, you're not gonna live in Bakersfield. I'm gonna put you in like Carmel. It's beautiful. There's tons of pasture. We're gonna find out this is where all the green pasture is in Egypt. This is the equivalent of the Shephelah in Israel, the low hills with all the green grass. This is the Shephelah in Egypt, not the same saying, but it's green grass, okay? And we're going to find out why he puts him there in a second. So he's going to put him in a very nice spot, removed, by the way, from the Egyptians, okay? You're going to live there in Goshen. You shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, and your flocks and your herds and all that you have. So go home. Don't just get dad, but get what else? Everything. You're leaving. Okay, this is not a, you know, this isn't just a vacation. You're leaving home and you're going to relocate. Take everything and bring it with you. Okay? Verse 11, what does he promise them? I'm going to take care of you guys, the entire family. I will provide for all of you, okay? Verse 12, behold, your eyes see, and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see, that it is my mouth which is speaking to you. You know this is me. Go home, get all this stuff. I will take care of you. You must, verse 13, tell my father of all the splendor in Egypt and you and all that you have seen, and you must hurry and bring my father down here, okay? So go home and get brother. And, or go get dad, rather. Okay, 14. This is a cool interaction. Read that.
And he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept upon his neck.
Isn't that cool? Like, Benjamin may not even remember Joseph, right? Because he was so young when he left. But they weep, as I mean, brothers, and just embrace and weep, okay? 15, watch what else he does.
And he kissed all of his brothers and wept upon them. After that, his brothers talked with him.
Okay, so each brother now, you know, he systematically, the other 10 goes through and hugs them, embraces them, loves them, says, man, we're good, right? What do you think that conversation was about in verse 15? Afterward, his brothers talked with him. Yeah, probably after some other stuff, but what do you think that was at first? Yeah. I'm so sorry. You know, it's okay. I love you. Come here. We're good. I love you. Go get dad. Come back. I'm going to take care of you. It's okay, right? And they're still wrestling with, gah, what? Like, right? So, but they're experiencing, because Joseph made their sin so great and for them to finally recognize, they'd overlooked it for so many years and saw it as minor. Because he helped them understand your sin is so great, then they were able to see how much greater his grace was, right? And to paint that for them, it was even bigger, right? It was even better because he made that happen, okay? So they talk, okay? Now 16, this is Pharaoh's interaction now with Joseph, 15, or 16 and 17, read that.
When the report was heard in Pharaoh's house, Joseph's brothers had come. It pleased Pharaoh and his servants. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this. Load your beast and go back to the land of Canaan, and take your father and your household and come to me, and I will give you the beast of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat of the cattle land.
Or the best of the land. Beast of the land, too. There have been lots of beasts mentioned, so keep going.
And you, Joseph, are commanded to say, do this. Take wagons from the land of Egypt for your little ones and for your wives, and bring your father and come. Have no concern for your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt.
And this is Pharaoh speaking. Why is that so significant? Pharaoh hears that Joseph's brothers had come into the land, and what does he do? Man, that's awesome. Go back. Go get dad. And what else do you get? Here's some wagons. You're getting the best of the land. Go home. Bring everything back. Tell me about Joseph's working relationship with Pharaoh. This guy's freaking awesome in Pharaoh's sight. Do you see how the subordinate working for a non-Christian boss paid off? This is because Joseph does his job and he does it with excellence. Pharaoh is filthy rich because of Joseph. And he's going to get filthier rich as this famine wears on. Everybody is coming to Pharaoh and it's a name your own price game. We're selling grain. How much do you want for it? This. We're not going to pay that. We're the only store in town that has food. This is what you're going to pay. Okay. Right? Brilliant. Joseph is making this guy silly rich. Okay. So because of that relationship, again, it says a ton about how he has handled himself with this guy. Okay.
I think it's pretty cool that the only person at this point who could have shut Joseph down from bringing his family in is Pharaoh. And Pharaoh basically reiterates the exact same.
Yeah. And I don't even know that Pharaoh knew what Joseph had proposition to his brothers. He just says the exact same thing. Bring him in. Give him the best of the land. Awesome, right? Give him everything. In fact, give him an escort all the way back home and coming back to Egypt. What do you need? It's yours. I mean, that's amazing, right? Just that relationship that he has with Pharaoh, okay? Pharaoh's still worshiping other gods. Joseph pretty clearly is still worshiping his God, right? This isn't some compromised, Hebrew. This is a guy that's still worshiping his God. Fantastic, okay? Sons of Israel did according. Joseph gave them wagons according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. To each of them he gave changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of clothes. Changes of clothes in that day are a big deal, okay? You've got extra, that's significant. So he, again, blesses Benjamin even beyond. To his father he sent as follows: donkeys loaded with the best things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain and bread and sustenance for his journey. Why would he send those things to dad? He's old? What is he trying to say to Jacob? Yeah. He's proving them, yeah, look, we have stuff. Here's an example of the stuff that we have. We're okay. Now, think about this. You're Jacob. Let's wait. We're going to get there. Sorry. I keep getting ahead of myself. The story's so good. Okay, so he sends that back, sends him with gifts as a preview of what's to come. Okay, there's plenty. You're good. It's okay. You're living in a land of famine. Come to Egypt. Okay. Verse 24, this is Jacob's or Joseph's response to his brothers. Read 24 and 25. Why would he say that to them? Potentially. This is the first time that Joseph isn't with them after all this has gone down. Why is he saying, don't quarrel?
Don't start blaming each other.
Don't start pointing fingers. It's done. It's over. Reuben, don't be getting ticked at Judah. Judah, don't be, I told you so. It's done. You're brothers. You're forgiven. Move on, okay? He doesn't even want strife between them, okay? It's over with, okay? You see the completeness of his forgiveness, okay? Goes up from the land of Egypt, came to the land of Canaan, to their father. They told him, saying, Joseph is still alive. How did that strike Jacob? Like, what? Okay? And indeed, he is ruler over all the land of Egypt, but he was stunned, for he did not believe them, right? That's part of the quarreling, too. Ooh, how are we going to explain this to dad? Because we pretty clearly communicated that Joseph got eaten by some wild animal and showed him the tunic. Like, they are hosed. So I think Jacob had suspicions. Those suspicions are realized. You have lied to me for 20 plus years about the condition of my beloved son. And not just lied to me about what happened, but you're responsible for it. You did this to him. Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. So 26, same response, right? He doesn't believe them. So you can again see their voice with dad is in a tough spot. Okay, that's on them. Man, they've chosen that consequence, unfortunately, and it's going to get better, but their initial response from dad is like, what? And you can imagine why, right? It's ludicrous that he would still be alive, okay, in Jacob's eyes. So when they told him all the words of Joseph that he had spoken to them, and when he saw the wagons that Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of their father Jacob revived. Then Israel said, it is enough. My son Joseph is still alive. I will go down and see him before I die. So he knows, man, this is my last journey, right? I'm going to go see my son, and then I'm not going to die. I'm not going to die without seeing him, but I'm not going to live much longer, okay? 46, let's pick up there. This is kind of fascinating. Okay, so now Beersheba is down south in the desert, so they're coming out of the Negev, okay, all the way down south in Israel, and, well, that's the lowest part of Israel. I suppose they're going from where they were down south to Beersheba. So that's on their way out of town. They're about to go through the desert, okay, to get to Egypt, all right? So they're in Beersheba, okay? And by the way, we're going to go there, which is freaking awesome. Verse 2, if Israel quits bombing the Gaza Strip right now. That doesn't concern us. It's not anywhere near where we're going to be, so don't worry about it. Verse 2, keep going.
Now
Now, when's the last time that we've seen God speak to Jacob? Just remember? Yeah, that was the last time. So Jacob was, you know, a younger 40-ish old man coming out of Padan Aram with his wife, getting ready to meet Esau. He wrestles with this man, from daylight, and he speaks to Jacob now. Now, he's at the end of his life. It's probably been 40, 50, 60 years since God has spoken to him in a dream. Why would it be so significant that God shows up now? If you're Jacob, what are your concerns right now? Where are you leaving? You're leaving the promised land. To where?
Egypt,
which is full of a bunch of what? Pagans. Like, God, are you, really? Are you in this? Like, this is my last journey, and I'm not just taking me. I am relocating the entire family. I am leading this thing, and I'm giving the stamp of approval that this is where we're going. Okay, we're going to find out. They're taking kids, grandkids. We're going to get a number here in a bit. There's probably close to 100 people that they're bringing, okay, on this journey. Really, God? You guys remember a verse that talked about way back with Abraham that God said he would send his people to another country, that they would suffer affliction for 400 years? That's what this is. This is the shot that God had called. The iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. He says, I'm going to send you to a country that's not yours, and you're going to grow to where the point is you can't even number them. If you can number the stars in the sky, that is how big the nation's going to be when they grow here. Okay, so this is a pretty significant turning point to willfully leave the promised land to go to another place that clearly is not. Okay, and here's what God says to him, because I think he knows Jacob's wrestling with this. Okay, here I am, verse 3, keep going. So you're going to go down. This is my will. Don't be afraid. You're going to see Joseph, and what's going to happen? What does that mean? Joseph's hand will close your eyes. Yeah, you're going to die, and he will be next to you. Okay? Jacob realizes this. Man, this is my last journey, right? I'm going to die soon after this, but Jacob, you're going to see your son again, and your eyes will be closed by your son. Okay? So pretty cool that this is the last time we see God show up in Jacob's life, and it's to assure him, this is my will. It seems wacky, but this is my will for you, okay? So go. Jacob arose from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried their father Jacob and their little ones and their wives and their wagons, and Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They took in verse 6 their livestock, their property, which they had acquired in the land of Canaan. They came to Egypt, Jacob and all his descendants with him, his sons, his grandsons with him, his daughters and his granddaughters, and all his descendants he brought with him to Egypt, okay? 8 and following, we get an entire list of sons and kids, okay? And all these names from each one of the sons, okay? 26. Read that. Here's how many we got.
All the persons belonging to Jacob who came into Egypt, who were his own descendants, not including Jacob's sons' wives, were 66 persons in all. And the sons of Joseph who were born to him in Egypt were 2. All the persons of the house of Jacob who came into Egypt were 7.
Okay, so you take all the sons, their kids, okay? You take Jacob, Joseph, Ephraim, and Manasseh. You got 70 people that are going into Egypt. Now, this doesn't count like Dinah's husband and their kids and whatever, so there's probably a few more grandkids and such. So we're talking 70 to 100 people. Not a really big number compared to what's going to leave Egypt, right? It's a big caravan, no doubt, traveling throughout the desert. But remember that. They're going to go in with 70 people. They're going to leave with a minimum of 1.5 million people when they leave Egypt, okay? Probably closer to 3 million, okay? Think about that in the desert, wandering around, okay? I.e., Exodus in the book of Deuteronomy and Numbers and such. Really? That was awesome. Sorry, it splashed over my face. Yes, Goshen is in Egypt. It's just, it's Fresno Clovis. I live in Fresno. Yeah, it's still in Egypt. It's a portion of the land in Egypt that's just the best of the best. So Yeah. Yeah. But they are going to go in to meet Pharaoh, okay? So they're going to go in, and then they'll ultimately live in Goshen, okay? So they take everything with them, okay? Verse 28, he sent Judah before him to Joseph. So again, the recognized leader sent by dad is Judah to point the way with him to Goshen. Joseph in 29 prepares his chariot, went up to Goshen to meet his father Israel. As soon as he appeared before them, he fell on his neck and he wept on his neck for a long time. So dad and son, after 20 plus years, are reunited. Okay, so this is cool. Israel says to Joseph, "Let me die since I have seen your face and you are still alive. My life is complete. Joseph, seen you again. It's all good." Joseph said to his brothers, "I will go up and tell Pharaoh, and he will say to him, 'My brothers and my father's household who were in the land of Canaan have come. They're here, and the men are shepherds, for they have been keepers of livestock, and they have brought their flocks and their herds and all that they have.'" So he's going to tell Pharaoh, "Hey, they're here. Come on." Okay. 33, Joseph is going to give a very interesting piece of advice to his brothers. Okay. He says, "Hey, Pharaoh's going to come, and he's going to ask you, 'What is your occupation? What do you guys do for a living?'" Right? "Hey, nice to meet you." The next question is, "What do you do?" That's how guys speak, right? "Who are you? What's your name? What do you do for a living?" Okay, that's guys, okay? And he says to them, verse 34, this is how you need to answer. Read that.
"Your servants have been keepers of livestock from our youth, even until now, both we and our fathers, in order that you may dwell in the land of Goshen. For every shepherd is an abomination to you."
So just tell them, "You're keepers of livestock. Don't say that you're shepherds." Don't use that language. That is it's offensive. They're an abomination to Egyptians. So just say that you keep livestock, general livestock, okay? Just, it'll make life easier, okay? Joseph's not asking them to lie. He's just asking them to don't intentionally tick off Pharaoh after you say hello, and the very next thing you do is offend him, okay? Just, he's asking them to be smart and shrewd, okay? Keepers of livestock, okay? So don't tell them you're shepherds. 47, Joseph went and told Pharaoh, "My brothers and my fathers are here. It's all awesome. Behold, in the land of Goshen," he took five men, verse 2, "from among his brothers and presented them to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said to his brothers, 'What is your occupation?'" Verse 3. So they said to Pharaoh, read that.
"Your servants are shepherds."
Good job. I told you to say anything but "we're shepherds." And you said, "We're shepherds." Like, idiots. Like, what are you doing, right? My buddy just told me a story. It's so funny. He plays polo, and he gets called by organizations all over the world to come play. So, like, polo players are like rentable, right? So you just pay guys to come. So he went down to Cancun. They pay his way, and he goes and plays polo, okay? So they fly to Cancun. He and a buddy of mine get off the plane. They're in this Avis rental car driving to the polo fields, okay? There's four of them in the car. My buddy, and my two buddies, and then my buddy's brother and his wife, okay? There's four white people in the car, okay? My buddy runs a stop sign, okay? And Scott, my buddy Scott runs a stop sign. And my buddy Chris, who's playing polo, is in the car with him. And they get pulled over. And he said, "Listen, cop's going to come to the car. You don't speak any Spanish. I don't speak any Spanish. Nobody in the car speaks Spanish, okay? And they're all fluent in Spanish, right?" So they are all four of them are fluent. He said, "Just, it'll make it a lot easier. Just say, 'I don't know what you're talking about. We're on our way to go play polo. This will go a lot easier.'" Literally, as the cop's walking up to the door, he's saying, "No one in the car speaks Spanish." Rolls down the window. Cop says, habla Español. Solamente un poquito, you know, and he starts going on in Spanish. And the guy's like, "Oh my God, you idiot." So the cop just rails them in Spanish, takes my buddy's driver's license. And this is how they do it in Mexico, apparently. They take your driver's license and they say, "You can come to the courthouse on Monday." This is a Saturday or a Friday, and come get your driver's license back after you pay your fine. Well, their flight leaves on Saturday, right? So long story short, he just hard drive locks up like, "Oh gosh, what do I say?" And he asked him a question. He was like, "We're shepherds," right? Dang it. So I don't think they meant bad. I think hard drive's locked up, and he's like, you know, un poquito. And it was over at that moment, right? So I don't think they were being, like, belligerent. I think they're standing in front of Pharaoh, and they're like, "What do you do?" "We're shepherds." Oh, idiot. You know, and Joseph's just got his hand on his forehead, you know, like, "You guys got a lot to learn," right? So anyway, it goes well. Pharaoh says to them, "Hey," they said to Pharaoh, "we've come to sojourn in the land," verse 4, "there's no pasture for your servants' flocks, for the famine is severe in the land of Canaan. Now, therefore, let us live in your land. Hey, man, if we could hang out in Goshen, that'd be awesome." Pharaoh said to Joseph, "Your father, and your brothers have come to you. The land of Egypt is at your disposal. So, hey, Pharaoh says, take it all, man. All this is yours. Settle your father and your brothers in the best of the land and let them live in the land of Goshen. And if you know capable men among them, put them in charge of my livestock. This was Joseph's plan from the beginning. Okay. Pharaoh says, live in the land of Egypt. In fact, live in Goshen, the best of the land. In fact, Joseph, if you've got capable men among your brothers, why don't you let them take care of all my livestock as well? Right? That's good for them. Okay. 7, this may be one of the coolest verses in your Bible.
And Joseph brought in Jacob, his father, and stood him before Pharaoh.
Now, here you have the patriarch of the family of God and Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world. And for the first time, these two guys are going to meet. And watch what happens.
And Jacob blessed Pharaoh.
Isn't that cool? Pharaoh didn't bless Jacob. Jacob is the older, wiser, and he blesses Pharaoh. Like, just a cool picture, right? So, again, I like this Pharaoh, right? He's brilliant. He puts Joseph in charge. I don't know that we even know. There's a couple ideas of who this guy could be historically. But he's good to Egypt and blesses them. And while this guy is living, Israel has it really good in the land. It's not till this guy dies and a new Pharaoh takes over. See also Exodus chapter 1, that it all goes really bad for Egypt or for Israel. Okay. So Jacob, the patriarch, blesses Pharaoh. And then keep going in 8.
How many are the days of the years of your life? And Jacob said to Pharaoh, the days of the years of my sojourning are 130 years. Few and evil have been the days of the years of my life, and they have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their sojourning.
So he's saying, man, my life's been tough. Lost a kid early on. I'm 130. Thought I lost another kid. It's been a rough go, and I don't measure up to my father and my grandfather. Okay, it's basically what he's saying. He said, it's been a tough life. I'm not lying to you, right? Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out of his presence. Okay, Pharaoh, verse 13, settles his brothers in the best of the land, gives them the land again of Goshen in the land of Ramesses. Pharaoh, as Pharaoh had ordered. Okay, and we'll pick up on the rest of that story tomorrow, and we will finish Genesis, right? Our first book, now that it's almost Thanksgiving break. So that's par for the course, by the way. They don't all take this long, but that's Genesis. So, all right? So we will see you guys in the mañana.